Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare with Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter, a show where we speak to the top thought leaders in health innovation, health policy, care delivery, and the great minds who are shaping the healthcare of the future. This week, Mark and Margaret speak with Dr. John Moore, Medical Director for Fitbit Care, a personal coaching platform at Fitbit, the wearable device company. Dr. Moore discusses the platform, which provides personal coaching and health coaching services to help users achieve their fitness goals and better control of chronic disease management. Lori Robertson also checks in, the managing editor of FactCheck.org, looking at misstatements spoken about health policy in the public domain, separating the fake from the facts. And we end with a bright idea that's improving health and well-being in everyday lives. If you have comments, please email us at chcradio@chc1.com or find us on Facebook or Twitter, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can also hear us by asking Alexa to play the program Conversations on Healthcare. Now, stay tuned for our interview with Dr. John Moore, Medical Director of Fitbit Care, on Conversations on Healthcare.
We're speaking today with Dr. John Moore, physician, engineer, and medical director of Fitbit, overseeing the newly launched Fitbit Care, a tech-enabled connected health coaching platform for wellness, prevention, and disease management. Dr. Moore is co-founder and former CEO of Twine Health, a health coaching enterprise which was acquired earlier this year by Fitbit. John, you last joined us several years ago while you were still at MIT Media Lab, where your research focused on solutions to improving patient engagement and empowerment. And clearly, your frustrations with the health system's inability to help patients succeed in their own care management beyond the doctor's door really inspired you to leave the clinical track, focusing on efforts on the health tech space, launching Twine in 2013. And since then, companies like Fitbit have added a key element to advance that quest, the wide proliferation of user-friendly wearable technology. And I'm wondering if you could just share with our listeners your journey from that startup of Twine to this new collaboration with Fitbit, and why you think the time is now right for health coaching to really scale up.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned, I left my residency back in 2007, and it was really because I got inspired to support people between office visits. I was struggling as a physician. There was this aha moment for me that no matter how hard I tried in the office, as we know, 99.99% of health happens out in the real world. And until some of the early technologies for digital health came out, there wasn't a whole lot we could do. Because if you just call people on the phone or try to schedule visits, it's very hard to fill that time in between. But right when I was in my residency was a time when mobile computing started to catch on. It was pre-iPhone, but you could see that it was coming. And I started to get this conviction that there was going to be a path to be able to rethink how we communicate and collaborate with people. And even further, their contribution could change dramatically such that they're not just at the center of care, but they're actually driving it. And so that was really the impetus for this work. And spent 6 years at MIT, at the MIT Media Lab, doing research and really having the opportunity to fail fast and quickly try out radical new ideas and land on things that we had confidence that could work, and then ran a few randomized controlled trials where we could compare the state of the art in health coaching with the same health coach, but with our tools that would augment their ability to co-create action plans, track people's progress, provide social support and clinical support to individuals so that they could succeed in their goals. Found some quite compelling outcomes from that, and then built Twine Health with that business proposal of improving diabetes, hypertension, weight loss, smoking cessation, et cetera. And spent about 4 years there at Twine Health working with organizations in a commercial manner in order to validate that we could do this at larger scale, and then joined forces with Fitbit because what we wanted to do was expose it to many more people. And Fitbit is arguably one of the largest digital health interventions out there, and brings to bear a great capability of inspiring and engaging people in health behavior change. So partner those health coaching skills with Fitbit's ability to help people measure and become inspired to change their health and to impact the lives of many people. And then we have a bit of a perfect combination.
John, I think you've really tapped into the zeitgeist of the clinician's dilemma. We do so much to help our patients manage chronic conditions or heal from acute conditions, but we just can't be there to carry them over the finish line in their own race towards wellness and prevention. You've spent a lot of time analyzing what drives behavior change, how technology can play a vital role at that. You did that first at Twine and now at Fitbit. What did all that research reveal about the ways to get around or overcome the perennial challenge of fostering behavior change in our patients that we know would lead to better long-term health outcomes? What's been missing? What do you see as the solution?
Yeah, so there's a few foundational things that we've discovered from the research that are really key to helping people change behavior. One is that people really need to set goals in very small steps in order to have a path that they believe is achievable. That seems pretty obvious, but they also need to think about things in quite short time frames. We operationalize behavior change as humans in about 2-week intervals. And in healthcare, we often operate in 3 to 6 month intervals. So they're foundationally out of sync. And if we can instead communicate with people on a daily or weekly basis, especially at the beginning of their behavior change journey, we can shrink that feedback loop down to an appropriate amount of time that allows people to create the motivation and momentum that they need to succeed. If you wait too long, you lose too many people. So people really need small goals. They need short timeline feedback loops. And they need more than just their own internal drive. And the social accountability and social support are two of the most powerful external motivators for people to change behavior. So you break the goals into smaller pieces, make the feedback loop much tighter, shorter time period, and then you add social support and accountability to help drive them to feel motivated and to give them the support that they need. And that combination just was not possible to do at scale without some of the new advances in technology. As great as a health coach might have been, if they didn't have the right tools to get on that smaller time frame, smaller pieces, and to provide their support, it just wasn't possible before. But now with technologies that came available for us in building our solutions, we were able to close this.
John, we're seeing a growing interest in deploying community health workers to connect people where health happens, in the home, in the workplace, in their neighborhoods. So that's one way we're narrowing some of those care gaps between clinician visits. But you're presiding over a system at Fitbit Care that goes way beyond that model. And the patient is connected 24/7 to coaching infrastructure that's available through multiple interfaces and texting and messaging and phone conversations and even in-person consults. And I'm wondering, again, if you could talk about that infrastructure of health coaching approach at Fitbit and what makes it unique? What's different about it?
Yeah, so maybe I'll start with what we had with the health coaching and then add on the other tiers of pieces that we now have at Fitbit to pull together. So the human health coaching is this piece that we've developed technology that allows for the creation of what we call action plans. And the action plans break down your health goals into meaningful pieces. For an example, a gentleman in his 50s named Dave has high blood pressure and he's a smoker. We allow you to build action plans across multiple health behavior change goals, but to do so in sequence. So Dave might say, hey, I'm not ready to quit smoking yet, but I'm ready to work on this blood pressure piece because my brother had a heart attack several years ago. I know that I'm not doing the right thing by my blood pressure. I can't make it to the doctor's office all the time. I would never follow through with that. But if you're telling me you can be my health coach and be, can be available to me on a day-to-day basis with as simple as a secure text within this app, I'm willing to give it a try. So we have the infrastructure to create these action plans that are very structured, and they break the goal into tiny pieces. So instead of trying to get his blood pressure all the way down to 120 over 80, they decide to step it down in small increments from where he is. For example, maybe he's in the 150s, and they want to get it down to the 140s. They set that goal, and it allows you to decide, well, when during the day and how many times a day and how many times per week are you trying to achieve this? And it's designed for co-creation. So it's not someone telling Dave, you need to do this. It's saying, well, what do you think you can achieve and how can we get there together? And when they build that plan, it automatically synchronizes to all of his devices, his cell phone, his tablet, his computer. And as he tracks things, it flows back to his coach and bubbles up at a population level. So instead of his coach needing to manage Dave and all of her other coachees on a schedule, she manages based on need. She can see, hey, is Dave struggling with his plan? Is his blood pressure going in the right direction? As opposed to, you know, I'm going to talk to him 2 weeks from now. And because of that, she's able to really give him an experience where he feels like he's the only person that counts. And that's an incredibly psychologically motivating piece of this. So that's the infrastructure, action plans and communications on top of that, that aren't just one-to-one, but are team-based and allow that team to see who needs help and when, which allows you to scale this at an incredible rate. And then we can measure the performance of every coach and every care team member in real time. So we know if a given coach has a cohort of 200 coachees, we know exactly how they're performing in things like diabetes or hypertension. And we can compare them to their peers so that we can help them adopt best practices and optimize their performance. And that was something that didn't really exist in health coaching in the past. It was a bit more of a black box.
John, not only are the clinicians looking for ways to get better health outcomes, obviously stakeholders and payers have a big interest as well. In fact, Fitbit just announced their big partnership with Humana, making Fitbit Care available to some 5 million customers. And that is going to offer the coaching solutions you've talked about. But they have to be willing, it seems, to share their data. The consumer or the patient has to be willing to share their data, how well they've slept, how many steps they have or maybe have not taken. And we see that there's been some real resistance in people to being held so accountable for the personal choices one makes. So talk with us a little bit about how this partnership with entities like Humana will work. And most importantly, how do you get the buy-in and engagement from the consumer?
Yeah, let me break that into a few pieces. So first of all, I've started to talk about the different tiers of what we offer. And I talked about the coaching piece. And you did a great job of highlighting how Fitbit also inspires and the Fitbit devices and those pieces also inspire people. Well, we connect that in with the coaching, drive more and more data to flow. We also leverage our social communities, which are very powerful drivers to help inspire and engage people as well. And then we also have more and more digital tools that provide guidance. We have a whole host of video and audio workouts that sit between the coach and the self-tracking that provide some more digital and automated guidance. And then, so those are the pieces. And then to your question, well, how do we inspire people to join this? And how do we deal with potential concerns that they have about their data privacy and security, especially if we're dealing with their health plan or with their employer? So that answer is quite simple. In the terms of service and the way we work with employers and with health plan beneficiaries, we're not in these relationships sharing the individual person's data back to any other entity without their permission. And in many times, we're not even asking their permission to share the data back with that organization because that's not part of the design. Part of the design is that we just share aggregate data about the overall effectiveness of the intervention back to the organization to provide the value. But our coaches and our software are responsible for providing the services to help them succeed. So really, they're only sharing their data with Fitbit. Now, there are certain relationships where there are data sharing agreements, but we make that very clear to the individual and very clear of what value it could provide and you know, give them the choice of with whom they want to share their data. But a lot of the times it's just about us providing them the service and them working with their coach to get the results. And that eliminates a lot of the concern and a lot of these designs of interventions.
We're speaking today with Dr. John Moore, physician, engineer, and medical director of Fitbit, overseeing the newly launched Fitbit Care, a tech-enabled connected health coaching platform for wellness, prevention, and disease management. Dr. Moore is co-founder and former CEO of Twine Health, a health coaching enterprise which was acquired earlier this year by Fitbit. John, one of the things that clinicians are increasingly dealing with is data inundation. The increasing level of digitally generated health data is a daunting task to tame. And Fitbit faces this problem. It's sitting on just mountains of data. And we recently had tech writer David Pogue talking about his recent foray into Fitbit's 150 billion hours of heart data alone. And while your platform is really great about gathering data, how are you gaining insights from that data in a way that will make this coaching platform an iterative one that continues to adapt to huge data sets you collect on the individual level? And how does that system learn and improve itself?
Yeah, this is a really fun and exciting time for us because we've already, just with the tools that we've created for coaching, we've been able to, on average, increase the panel size of a given coach by about 3 times because of the additional contribution of the individual participant and because of tools for efficiency and helping to identify people in need for the coach. But to your point about how do we crunch through all this data and make the process even more efficient and insightful, we have quite a large team of data scientists and machine learning experts on our team that, since the advent of Fitbit, have been using these kind of techniques to find tidbits in the data. Even simple things like what seems simple, like tracking your steps or figuring out your sleep stages, a lot of that is driven by AI, right? Because there aren't simple algorithms to detect those. You have to crunch through a lot of data. And now what we're starting to do is expose what we call insights, very, you know, same word that you use to describe this, in the application. And these are already released and out there, especially around sleep. So, for example, the other day I exercised about 15 minutes before going to sleep. I went for a swim, and in the morning it gave me an insight that said, hey, it's great that you're exercising, but were you aware that exercising right before sleep can affect the quality of your sleep? Take a look at your sleep data and see how it's affect, you know, your activities are affecting that. So it's looking across my data, finding interesting tidbits that are based on science and feeding them back to me as an individual to help me tune my behaviors. Well, we're interested in doing the same kind of thing with coaches. If we can feed those insights to the coaches as well, then they can help to doubly reinforce that and help people to discover even more strategies for optimizing their behavior. And you can imagine the more and more coaching interactions, the more capability we have to learn from the kind of insights that coaches are coming up with and to help tune our algorithms and improve this process. So I think the kind of scale that we're at now with a panel size for a coach about 3x, we're quite optimistic that we can drive that scalability up even higher with leveraging all of this data and all the ability to crunch through that and find the right people who need the right care at the right time.
John, I said you were a physician and an engineer, or medical director at Fitbit, but you're really a technologist with an eye out in the future. One of the hats you also wear is as a judge of the Tricorder X Prize competition, which has sought entries from developers around the world to make a handheld smart device that does a whole host of medical diagnostics in the palm of your hand, really just like the Star Trek show that we grew up watching. And as we see a growing interest in developing these kinds of technology, and knowing personally how difficult it can be to make such an innovations viable in the marketplace. What are you seeing on the horizon that looks like a possible paradigm shifter in the healthcare space?
Yeah, I think really the paradigm shifter is leveraging human touch along with scalability of technology to change the way we communicate and collaborate. I think all of the exciting new devices and sensors and other technologies only have value when you have that ability to allow health coaches and nurses and doctors to collaborate with individuals in this new manner. That is what is going to be the game changer that is going to help all the digital health companies to succeed in their goal of helping people be healthier. I think if we just build more and more technologies that pull more data, it's not going to get us to the promised land. We're really going to need to double down on that ability to create this feedback loop where we can set goals, create social accountability and support, and create small feedback loops that allow people to collaborate together. So much for having me.
We've been speaking today with John Moore, physician, engineer, and medical director of Fitbit, overseeing the newly launched Fitbit Care, a tech-enabled connected health coaching platform for wellness, prevention, and disease management. Dr. Moore is the co-founder and former CEO of Twine Health, a health coaching enterprise, which was acquired earlier this year by Fitbit. You can learn more about their work by going to Fitbit.com or follow them on Twitter at Fitbit. John, thank you so much for your continued innovations and for joining us on Conversations on Healthcare today.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
At Conversations on Healthcare, we want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
In a contentious Oval Office meeting, President Donald Trump and the Democratic congressional leaders, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, disagreed over funding for a border wall. The president claimed that one reason for the wall was to stave off a public health risk. Trump claimed that, quote, people with tremendous medical difficulty and medical problems are pouring in. And he said, quote, in many cases, it's contagious. Prior to the meeting, Trump made a similar claim in a tweet saying that Democrats, quote, want open borders for anyone to come in. This brings large-scale crime and disease. The scientific evidence, however, does not support the idea that migrants are a substantial public health risk. A report published in December in the journal The Lancet directly addressed the subject and concluded that, quote, the risk of transmission from migrating populations to host populations is generally low. When there are legitimate concerns, such as for tuberculosis, the report notes that studies show while there may be an increased risk for transmission within migrant communities, that isn't the case for host populations. A 2000 study in Norway that analyzed tuberculosis cases over 12 years found that each year on average, 13 immigrants and 2 non-immigrants developed the disease as a result of imported TB. The researchers concluded that immigration, quote, did not appear to influence the TB situation among the existing residents of the country. The more recent report in The Lancet, which was written by 24 experts on the UCL Lancet Commission on Migration and Health, cautions that it doesn't have good data on undocumented immigrants and acknowledges that migrant populations might come from countries with higher disease rates. But outbreak risk is low if the destination country has strong surveillance and public health services. Quote, these services are also crucial to prevent pandemics, the report said, whether associated with population movement or not. For some communicable diseases, such as measles, some migrants come from countries that have higher vaccination rates than the United States. According to the World Bank, 92% of U.S. children age 1 to 2 received the measles vaccine in 2017. That's compared with 96% in Mexico, 97% in Honduras, and 99% in Nicaragua. And that's my fact check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of factcheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare. Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. When venture capitalist and Shark Tank co-host Mark Cuban decides to sink a couple of hundred thousands of dollars into your business idea, taking a very small percentage of the company in return, you're probably onto something. And that's what happened to Olivier Noel, a medical student and young geneticist at the University of Pennsylvania, when he appeared on the popular ABC show. Through his research and studies, Noel learned that no matter how many resources the clinical study has, it is still extremely difficult to get a large sample of participants to join in studies. There are many barriers to getting a good cross-section of study participants, especially ethnic diversity. So he thought, what if you could simplify the process, eliminate the barriers to research participation, and build up a rich DNA database for future research all at the same time? And he created DNA Simple because he wanted to make it, well, simple.
I think the idea came about right around my second year of my PhD. I was actually working out of the Institute of Personalized Medicine in Hershey. And one of the key problems that I saw there is that, you know, there was the proper infrastructure, there was sequencing ability, there was enough funding for really amazing research projects, but it ended up being a little bit of a chasing game where we couldn't build enough strong enough cohorts at first to be able to do some of the studies we wanted. Some of the patients we were looking for, it was taking a very long time for them to come. And every day it would be going down and talking to the genetic counselors and ask, you know, did we have patients with this background today? How many patients for that particular genetic background that we had this month? And so I ended up going to a genetics conference at Penn, actually. And the keynote speaker there was alluding to a similar problem. And one of the ways they were able to contact patients was through Facebook. And so through Facebook, they were able to connect with a number of patients all the way in India and organized the logistics to be able to get the sample. So the joke at the time at the conference was that, you know, Facebook is the new way of doing genetics. And really that stuck with me, and really when the sort of the light bulb went on, and I realized that that's something that we could use and leverage to be able to recruit patients differently. So I wanted to sort of leverage the internet and particularly leverage social media to be able to build a national database where somebody did not need to be a patient or go to the same hospital or be in the same region to be able to participate in this research study and properly provide samples for research.
All the participants have to do is to take a simple swab of the inside of the mouth, send it in, and wait to see if your specific DNA is of interest to researchers. Noel says that the company will make their DNA and disease data available to researchers studying specific diseases, offering those researchers a much broader spectrum of study participants.
So one of the things we really wanted to do with DNA Simple is to allow for the possibility of doing longitudinal study so that you keep track, you could continue keeping contact anonymously, obviously, with a particular donor. And so if you're doing a study, for example, and you have the ability to collect samples now, collect samples in 3 months, collect samples in 6 months, and see how that varies, which is very difficult to do if you're going to be in contact with a patient once. And so that was another key factor that we wanted.
And the study participants themselves receive an extra something for choosing to participate, a cash stipend for offering up their DNA to research.
So we ultimately provide a minimum of $50 every time somebody provides a saliva sample, which they could keep for themselves or donate it to a charity of their choice.
DNA Simple has gotten a big boost from the Shark Tank win, and they're scaling up the infrastructure to expand their DNA database to represent as broad a demographic spectrum as possible. DNA Simple, a vetted database linking researchers with a broad array of participants to enhance lab research by eliminating the barriers to finding participants. Now that's a bright idea.
You've been listening to Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare is recorded at WESU, at Wesleyan University, streaming live at chcradio.com, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have comments, please email us at chcradio@chc1.com or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We love hearing from you. This show is brought to you by the Community Health Center.